We're holding on for follow-up on the Bays by the Mishnah. Middle of the island. Since we talked in the previous Mishnah about, in the previous Mishnayos about the Dinim of Shein, and we're in Bava Kamma already. We've been there for a couple of weeks now. So we've been talking about the Nizokin of Shein and of Regel. So now, and we've talked about the cases when the Nezik is done in an unusual way, where then it's Chati Nezik because of Keren, or sometimes because of Tzoros. So now continuing on that topic. The Mishnah says, HaKelevagdi, if a dog or a goat jumped from on top of a roof, the shavru of a kalim, and they jumped down on the ground and landed on some kalim and broke them, mishalom nezek shalom. Then in that case, you pay nezek shalom for that kind of thing. Obviously, we're talking about the kalim owners or some nezek, mipnei shein mu'adin, because they're mu'ad to do such a thing. It's normal for dogs or goats to jump.
Dogs also.
So therefore, it's normal for them, and therefore it's not. Therefore, you can't consider it keren. You have to consider it regel, and regel is never shown.
There was an owner for the dog.
Obviously, yeah. Another case: a kelav shenato charora. If a dog takes a charora, which is we talked the other day, is a cake that's baked on the coals. Actually, the Aruch, interestingly, has a different explanation of charora. He says it means you dig a hole in the ground and fill it and fill it with coal and fill it with coals and then bake the bread in there.
You cannot take the whole.
No, the point is he took the bread that was baked in there. Anyway. So he takes that, which has coals still stuck to it, as it usually would, the Holach Lagodish, and he goes to a pile of grain that belongs to somebody else. He ate the charora, which belonged to one person. He burnt down the goddish with the coal. Now, the charora and the goddish may belong to the same person, may belong to different people. It doesn't matter for our purposes. Actually, it will. Later on, I'm going to talk about it. So for the charora, for the bread, he pays nezek shalom. That's shame. That's the nezek of shame. That's normal for a dog to eat bread like that. A dog will eat pretty much anything. For the goddess, you pay chati nezek for reasons which we will discuss in the Gemara. We're going to talk about it. Is it tzoros? Is it unusual? We're going to get.
Is it a charora or a different kind of bread?
No. Well, practically speaking, a charora has cold.
It has cold.
If it was a regular loaf of bread, they wouldn't be able to burn down a goddess with it. Yeah. So the Gemara starts off. Timer to kaftu. So what's the implication of the Mishnah? That why is chayiv nezek shalom for the kalim, because the animals jumped from the roof, hanaflu potter, which would imply that if they fell off and broke kalim, then you would be potter. Now, what are you doing with your animal on the roof? Meaning without jumping. But the point is, if the animal is up on the roof and you're not watching it, on the face of it, that's pshia. That's you're being careless with your animal. It could at any time jump down and break those kalim.
Regardless of whatever is jumping
off. Meaning, in other words,
why isn't this anything like about a cat?
Because
the cat is generally more shy of the jump.
Maybe, okay. It could have mentioned a cat. I don't know. I guess it was more common.
A cat doesn't fall.
Well, there is
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Okay.
A cat is more shy of the jump. They always
okay.
Land on their feet.
Be that as it may. Come on. No, we're not going to sit here and talk about animal behavior yet. Okay. The point is that on the face of it, you could argue it was pshia, it was careless of the owner of the dog to let the animal be on the roof in the first place, where it's in a position to jump down into somebody else's chatzar and break his kalim. But in this case, nevertheless, the Mishnah seems to be implying that even though you were careless in that regard, if the animal ended up falling off and breaking the kalim, you would be potter, because only you're saying you're chayav because they jumped. Well, then that's the implication, because otherwise the Mishnah would have said Akela Bagdi Shenaflu, and you would understand. If Naflu, you're Chayev, then how much more so if Kaftu? Tosfos points out, by the way, that you have to be talking about that when you get down to it, if an animal falls off a roof, it's going to break only kalim that are near the wall. If it jumps off, it's more likely to break kalim that are further away from the wall. So where exactly are these kalim? So Tosfos says either they might be someplace in the middle, there's someplace where you could land on them by falling, or you could fall on them by jumping, or they could be long kalim. They could be long kalim where you fall close to the wall, you'll break one end of them, you fall further away, you jump further away, you'll break the other end. Anyway, the point is, Alma Kasava, which evidently implies that our Mishnah therefore holds, that if you have a case we started out with Pshia, you started out by being careless, but in the end, the object ended up getting damaged not because of your Pshia, but because of an unrelated onus, then you're potter. Now that is, well, in this case, for example, you were Pshia in that you left your dog on the roof where it could jump down and break your neighbor's tailing. In the end, though, the implication is the dog fell down instead, accidentally, and was saying you're potter. If we were to say fell off the Pshia, the safer bonus higher,
you would
be
know if the dog jumped or fell?
Because you would see where it landed. Remember, you have to realize also, in all cases of Nizokin, there have to be Adim, because otherwise, how do you know what happened exactly? So Adim will have seen whether the dog fell or jumped.
And if there's no Adim,
there's no Adim, there's nothing to talk about anyway. Yeah. Which, the onus is that the dog fell.
Well, if you know whose dog it was.
Fine, but you don't, without somebody seeing that the dog actually landed on the caleb, and then later on find that the caleb are broken, you don't have any proof that his dog did it. Anyway, whatever. The point is that this point about Pshia and Onus is a machlokas in Bava Metzia. The Gemara discusses over there in Perek HaMafkid the question of when you have Chilas of Pshia, Pshia of Onus, are you chayav because to start out with you were Pshia, or are you potter because in the end it was lost because of an Onus? There's a number of examples of it in the Gemara over there. Now over here, our Mishnah seems to be implying potter. And in fact, Tanya Nami Hakibu, indeed we learn like that in a Braisa. Akelev more explicitly, Akelev Agdish, Kopsamiresh, Agag, if a dog or a goat jumped down from the top of the roof, a Shavarasa Kalim, and they broke Kalim underneath, Mishalim Nezik Shalim. On the other hand, here's where the Braisa adds to the mission, enough book certain. If the animals fall off, then you're potter. The owner of the animals is potter.
It was implied in our mission.
It was implied in our mission that the Braisa spells it out. Now, then the question becomes, potter. Fine, that works out very nicely according to the opinion. It's Machlokes Abaye and Rav over there. The Gemara discusses that maybe Rav holds one way or the other, whatever. So according to the opinion that it's potter, very well. You can understand our mission and the Braisa very well. El Mandama Chayev, Michael, remember, according to the opinion that you're Chayev in such a case because you were a Pshia to begin with, then what are you going to say? One example, by the way, just to make it more concrete, I mean, here we have an example of Chalas and Pshia besides a bonus. There in Bava Metzia, for example, the Gemara gives another example. You have, let's say, when somebody is mafkid money by somebody else, money is supposed to be kept buried in the ground. Any place else, it's liable to be stolen by thieves. There was a case there, the Gemara tells, where somebody took money that had been deposited with him, and he put it in a hut made out of willows, made out of arrows, sort of like a duck blind. It would be like a hut that hunters, that trappers would use when they're out trapping animals.
Without being in the ground.
Now, it's a very safe place. No ganav is going to think of looking for money in such a place. On the other hand, it's pshia as far as it could get burnt down. It's very flammable. In the end, Ganovim did find it and steal it. So that's a case, Chilasa of Shia for Seif of Onus. It started out by being Pashea. It's not proof against fire over there. Seif of Onus, because it ended up getting taken by Ganovim, which is totally unexpected. That's the Machlokes.
The whole point is you're hiding it because Ganovim wouldn't find it.
No, but the point is putting it in the ground is two things, Ganovim and fire. So like this, it's proof against Ganovim and it's proof against Urbani. Because they're not going to say.
Short of that.
No, but if you were to put it, that's the point. In other words, if you had someplace else that's equally proof against Ganovim and fire, would also be good. In this case, it's proof against Ganovim, or at least it should have been until somebody found it. Okay, whatever.
Right.
Okay. When we get to Bava Metzia, we'll learn about it in more detail. Right now, I'm just mentioning it to give another example. Okay. The answer is, you're going to Makavi Kalim the Gabi Kalim. So, yes, but you could be talking about in our Mishnah that the Kalim are very close to the wall, which in that case, it's not Chilas of Shia. Because what's the pshia? That your animal might jump off the roof? Fine, if it jumps off the roof, it'll wind up missing them. In this case, Nachlod ended up falling and therefore breaking the kalim because they were right next to the wall.
The key cast to the kvitza,
so if they were to jump, why not be alive, then they wouldn't fall. That's it with chilas of the pshia. So therefore, there's not even a chilas of the pshia over here. Chilas of the pshia is... Chilas of the pshia would be...
You're against the wall, it's good or bad?
It's good, because then that way, you don't expect that if there's no pshia over here. Your dog is up on the roof. If it ends up jumping, if you're not watching it, and it could end up jumping, it's not going to land on the kalim. It's expected to land far away from the kalim. So therefore, there's no pshia over there. In the event, it fell. Fine, that's complete onus to begin with. Therefore, everybody would agree about it.
But it was further away.
Then, according to the opinion, that's chilas of pshia, but safer bonus.
But
you'd be higher. Because the pshia was that you...
The pshia is the dog owner.
Not, yeah, that's not, what we're talking about, the dog's owner. No, we're not talking about the owner of the kelim. Of course not. We're talking about the dog's owner, yeah.
So if it's chalas of the pshia,
the owner of the dog is being chalas of the pshia by letting it stay on his roof without making sure that...
How's it chayiv shalom?
It's chayiv nezek shalom because he was pshia and because his dog ended up breaking somebody else's kelim.
So you said at the beginning, if pshia l'chatchila...
No, there's two opinions.
It's not a
nine. One, there's two opinions. If you say it's potter, then you don't need this business about them being next to the wall. Regardless where they are, you'd be potter. If you say it's chalas of the pshia, besides b'ayin it's chayiv, then it only works if they're next to the wall.
Because if they fall tonight, that's right.
Actually, you could even find a case, despite all of what we're saying, you could actually find a case where even if the animal falls, you're going to be chayiv. Mashkachasla, the kosa ru'ua. Namely, you could have that in a case if the wall itself is shaking. Rashi says not the wall per se, it means the railing, the mica around the roof is shaking. So therefore, then it's pshia, even if, like this, we were talking about the mica is strong, so it's a pshia as far as that the animal could still jump over, but it's an onus as far as it falling.
But if the mica couldn't fall.
That's the point. If the mica is shaky, you could still have it.
But if it's a solid mica, it could still climb
up to the top of the mica and then fall. But it would be a pshia, the fact that it could even climb up there and be able to launch itself to be able to jump from there.
But if the mic is shaky,
then you're chayiv no matter what happens, yeah.
I think there's a minimum. So the question is,
what are you saying that if the mic is shaky, then you should expect that the animal might fall? Is it that you're not talking about the animal falling? Is it that there's pshia over here because you should keep in mind, never mind the animal falling, bricks might fall off it and break the other person's cavern.
So what?
Bricks from the mica. We assume the mica itself is made out of bricks.
Why do we assume that?
Because the pastures, that's what they built micas in those days. It could be, but we're talking about it. After all, though, bricks didn't fall. The animal fell. Philosophy of pshia besides the bonus. Isn't that the same thing? Where there's pshia to begin with that, yes, the mica was shaky, so bricks could fall off at any time and break the other guy's kelim. In the event the dog fell, so two different things. The answer is, Lotzricha b'koyfel psal. True, but we still need him to be telling us the case if the mica is very narrow. Namely, so then the animal might climb up onto the mica, and because it's narrow, they'll easily fall off it. That would be pshia no matter what.
Why is it necessary for the mica to be wide?
Normally, if the mica is wide...
is to keep you from falling off.
Understood. If the mica...
just the events.
If the mica is wide, if that's the point, if the mica is wide, then it's normal enough for the animal to climb up on there. It is pshia for you to leave the animal up there where it could climb up on the mica and then jump into your neighbor's yard and break his cavern.
Uh-huh.
However, in the event, it was an onus because the animal fell or because the animal fell.
But if it's narrow,
then when it gets up there, it's very likely that it's going to fall, and therefore,
how does an animal get up there if it's narrow?
Because it's narrow. Whatever, it's narrow. It's still able to climb up there. It's narrow, but still, it's a narrow space, but still, it's able to climb up there. And then once it's there, it'll easily lose its footing and fall down. Rashi gives a second explanation that sire over here doesn't mean narrow; it means slanted. Same idea. It's slanted, and therefore the animal might easily slip off.
Towards the outside.
Yeah.
It's not a good mic.
It's good enough for people.
For a human being.
Yeah, for people, yeah.
It depends how much it's slanted.
Okay, maybe. Fun rabbana. Makela bagdi should dilgum makalamaila. If a dog, or so far we've been talking about with dog or the goat jumped from the top down, from the roof down into the neighbor's chutzit. What about the other way around? Should dilgum makalamaila if they jump? If they jump from below to above, pturim, then that's potter. From nezek, Rashi says they're potter from nezek sholim, they're chayiv and chati nezek, because that would be mishuna, that would be an unusual way of doing things. But if they jump from above to below, then you chayiv nezek sholim. Yeah. On the other hand, other than b'tarnagol, but a person or chicken should deal with bein milamata, chayiv. The reason is, Rashi says, because people, taka, it may not be usual for them to jump upward, however, adam would loylam. There's no difference for the person between whether what he did is normal for not. So whatever kind of nezik a person does, he's always responsible for it. As far as chickens, it's normal for them to jump in either direction. They may jump from the top down. They may jump from the bottom up.
Right.
I don't know.
No,
I
haven't been around. They have wings, you know.
Yep.
But they can't fly.
They can jump.
They can jump a couple of feet. Yeah.
They can't fly in flight, but they can fly.
And Tosfos points out the chiddush is not so much if the Adam is a pikeach, then of course he's chayav for whatever he does. The chiddush is, Tosfos says, even let's say, for example, you ask somebody to house sit for you. That guy has cheresh shota b'katan, who he's taken care of. He has to be responsible that cheresh shota b'katan don't jump onto the roof or onto someplace higher than where they're standing and break kalim or whatever. And if they do, he's going to be chayav. The person who's house sitting, the shomer. Vahatanya, but don't we learn a bride? So you're telling me that if the dog or the goat jumps from the bottom up your potter, Vahatanya, but I have a different bride that says Akela Bagdi should do go Ben Milamila, Ben Milamata, Ben Milamata, Lamila Turing. We have a bride that says regardless, whichever way they jumped, they're potter. So what do you mean? There's actually two different gears over here. The gear that we have is Turing. The Rif and the Rambam and some other Rishonim have a Girsa Chayavim. Let's first discuss according to the way Turin, and then we'll discuss according to the way Chayavim. So if we say they're both Potter, then what do you mean? The question is actually on the Mishnah and on the Braisa. The Mishnah, which mentioned only from the top down and implied that didn't say anything about from the bottom up, but it said that from the top down you're Chayav. And the Braisa, which explicitly said, and the first Braisa that distinguished between from the top down and from the bottom up, this last Braisa contradicts all of that. And in fact, Tosfos says, the Gemara, according to that, the Gemara could have used this Braisa right after the Mishnah. Which is the way that we waited until we quoted the other Braisa as well, and then we're acting on everything together. What do we do with this theater? Tugemara Papa. So the Papa explained that the answer is, the Apich Mepach. The case is that each one, the dog and the goat, has a normal way of jumping, but there can be. Each one did the opposite of what they usually do. Apich mepach means like hepech, they did the other way around. Kalba bizkira, namely, it's normal for a dog when it comes to jumping down, a dog usually braces itself, sort of, with digging its paws into the ground, and then it jumps. In this case, it didn't do it. Just the skira, it just gave a jump. Without, or not even jumping. It's normal that a dog is not so much, you asked before, that dogs don't usually jump. It's not so much that usually they jump. You know, we're not talking about from 10 feet up. We're talking a couple of feet. Your roof is 2 feet higher than your neighbor's, than your neighbor's chutz or whatever. So a dog won't usually jump per se, but it'll sort of reach down and go that way. You know, it'll sort of reach down with its front paws and then shut the rest of its body out.
How could the mica be only 2 feet above the chutzner? The chutzner is the ground.
So you can have this. Well, you have houses built on different levels up here in Crown Heights.
Unless you have a roof on the chutzner.
That's the point. No, you have a roof. Your house is built lower down. Your neighbor's chutzner is higher up. There's a floor.
Jumping from one to the other.
So, yeah.
Why you keep Kalim on the roof?
Whatever. No, they're not keeping Kalim on the roof. You're keeping Kalim on the chutzner. But whatever, it would be the same thing if you kept them on the roof. Roofs also can be different heights. The point is, kalbab is kira. It's normal for dogs to... Normally, dogs will do what's called sricha, that they'll sort of reach over. They'll get themselves sort of end over end from one place to another on their front 2 feet and then schlepping the rest of their body after. Instead, this dog, kira, gave a jump. But gadya b'sricha. And in the case of the goat, it's the other way around. Usually, goats just give a jump. Like this, it sort of reached forward, did what a dog would normally do. So again, and the point is that it's unusual. It's unusual. Therefore, it would be there. Therefore, you're back to that would be Karen. Then the question is, fine. Then what do you mean they're potter? The answer is potter. That's exactly what it means. Potter means shalom, b'chayav b'chati nezek. True. What it means is you're going to be chayav and chati nezek because it's Karen. Now, like I said, the Rif and the Rambam and the Hagoras Hagroa brings over here, the Rif and the Rambam have a different view, so, which is that this last braisa didn't say Peturin, but rather Chayobin, that regardless whether the dog or the goat go, Mimasa Lamailo, Mimailo Lamasa, there'll be Chayobin. In that case, the question is, in that case, the question is not really on the Mishnah, because the Mishnah didn't really speak about if they go from below to above. The Mishnah spoke about them going from above to below and said they're Chayy. Fine, there's no real contradiction to the Mishnah. But the first braisa, the Toner Rabbanah, that said that there's a difference between going down or going up. One you hire, one is father. There's then this last right to contradict that. And according to that, the answer would be that, when it comes to, okay, according to the Girsa that we have here, Turin and the Maskana of the Gemara, it would come out that dogs or goats jumping upward, you're always potter. Well, it's not potter. You're chayev chati nezek because it's always mishuna for them to go upward. Whether they go downward depends whether they go in the normal way or not. According to the Rif and the Rambam, it's the other way around. They're always chayev for going downward. That's what our Mishnah is saying. Regardless whether they jumped, whether they reached, whatever it is, it's normal enough for them to always go downward. That's the point. They do chayev nezek shalom because you're the regel. If they're jumping upward, that is what the Gemara is saying. Based on the last braisa, it depends how they jump upward. Do they reach up, and then do they reach up and schlep themselves upward, which is what a dog would normally do, and in this case, the goat did that? Or do they just jump up, which is what a goat would normally do, and in this case, the dog did that? So according to that way of looking at it, you're always higher if they jump downward and break the kalim. If they jump upward onto the other guy's roof or whatever, and then break the kalim, it'll depend how they jump. Whether it'll be tidauka and whether it'll be the usual way, in which case nezek shalom because rego, or unusual, in which case chati nezek because kerem. The Mishnah had said hakelav shenotal. The Mishnah had the case of a dog that takes the harora with coals attached to it and goes and eats the harora and burns down somebody's garbage. So this is obviously we have here a case of ish. So now the Gemara is going to get into the general question, which therefore explain our Mishnah on this basis, but a general question and an important sugya on the question: what's the basis of the chiyuv of ish? This is a very famous lomdish sugya. Itzman. There was a discussion of Amiroi. Rabbi Yochanan, on what ground, when the Torah says you chayev for a fire, you lit a fire and it spread and it burnt somebody else's property. What's the exact grounds on which you chayev? Especially, Meforshim point out, fire, unlike all the other nizikin, it requires some outside force. Usually you need the wind to spread it. So if the Torah is being mechayev you for it, nonetheless, what's the ground exactly?
If you're letting a fire, you have to take a safety measure around it.
Right, but in other words, if it burns for the wind, all you need is a very small safety measure. It's because of the wind that you need a larger safety measure, and if you didn't give that.
But since you have no idea what the wind is going
to
be like.
But you only have to be concerned about Ruach Metzuyah. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta. Here we're just dealing with one aspect of Eish. Later on, in the sixth Perek, we're going to deal in detail with the din of Nezikim of Eish, and we're going to say over there that if it's a ruach she'ena metzuya, if all of a sudden a hurricane blows up and spreads your fire, you're going to be potter. In general, with nezikin, we say you're responsible to take reasonable care of your thing, shmirasa malacha, but reasonable care. You're not expected for example, in the case of a shur, for example, you're expected.
You don't need a hurricane to spread fire.
But the point is, you can have a fire where you left. You can have your little fire in your backyard, and there's 20 feet of clear space around it. So unless a hurricane blows up, it's not going to spread that fire. And all of a sudden, a hurricane comes.
Hurricane won't do it.
Okay, whatever.
Because the hurricane is raining too.
No, whatever. Fine, then not a hurricane. Right. Strong wind. Come on.
Yeah, but a strong wind is sometimes very likely.
Sometimes, but it depends how likely it is. But that's the point. You expect
to have 50 mile an hour winds.
You're expected to take reasonable care.
Reasonable
care. Okay. Okay. Right. Okay. So Rabbi Yechanan says the chiyuv of fire is because the Torah is mechayev you because it's the equivalent of shooting an arrow. You shoot an arrow, and Isha, his fire is chayev mishum chitzav because of his arrow. Meaning the same way as if you shoot an arrow, that arrow ends up, it leaves your hand, you can't call it back, and it causes damage, kills somebody, or breaks something, or what have you. And obviously you chayev for that. Similarly, when you light a fire and it ends up spreading,
that means the distance of the arrow that it went?
No, well, however far an arrow is expected to go, yeah.
The loss of control.
The law, yeah.
So that's as far as he has to protect for the
that's
fire.
That's the point. In other words, when you lit a fire and it ends up spreading to somebody else's, you should. It's the equivalent of shooting an arrow, and you're responsible for what happens afterwards. Rish Lakish Amei Ishe Mishum Mamoinu. Rish Lakish says it's just a matter of... No, everybody agrees in that control. Everybody agrees in that control. And Paul says that. The question is, what's the underlying reason? What's the underlying... What's going to be important? We're going to see. We're going to see. And we're going to have a whole story over here on this. Rish Lakish Amei Ishe Mishum Mamoinu. Rish Lakish says rather the chiyuv of Eish is because of Mamoinu. It's like any other hezek. Just like you're chayev for your shur, which is called a hezek, because your shur is your Mamoinu and you're obligated to guard it. The same thing with Eish. It's your fire and you're responsible to guard it. Now, Rashi learns that the difference would be, at least the Gemara is assuming at this point, that the difference would be, what if you light a fire, what if you cause a fire using coals that are not your own? According to Rav Yechanan, it's still chitzav. You still shot the arrow. You still use the coal. According to Rish Lakish, it's not Mamoinu. Tosfos argues on that because, I mean, what's the logic? First of all, Tosfos says we have various other cases that we see that it doesn't seem to matter who the fire belongs to. For example, we're going to have an example later on in the Masechta, again, in the sixth parak, when we talk about the Dinim of Eish, we're going to have an example, for example, of a blacksmith who's working in his smithy, and a spark shoots out and sets something on fire. He's going to be chayiv, even though Rapashka's, the spark doesn't belong to him. He's surely makir it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand you said. Anyway, Tosfos has a couple of other questions. So therefore, Tosfos' answer is, when we say Ishe Mishum Mamoinu, we don't literally mean whether it's his Mamoinu or not. We mean in the sense that it's something that he's responsible to guard. The same way, Mishum Mamoinu, not Mishum Chitza, that's Rav Yechanan, that's Rav Lakish. So the difference is, Mishum Chitza would mean it's the equivalent of shooting an arrow. Mishum Mamoinu, according to Tosfos, would just mean it's something that you're responsible to guard. Now, okay, so Rish Lakish, my time alay Amos Rav Yechanan. Why doesn't Rish Lakish agree with Rav Yechanan? And in fact, later on, at the bottom of Chofbez and Mubez, the Gemara is going to point out that we have a pasuk which supports Rav Yechanan's view, and we have a Mish, a Braitha that also supports Rav Yechanan's view, that Isha Mishum Chitzav. So why doesn't Rish Lakish agree with that? The answer is, Amalah, Chitzav Mikoycha Kazli. The difference is that a chet goat moves completely based on your koyach. You shot the arrow. How far it goes and what direction it goes is completely depending on how you shot the boat from the boat. In this case, the fire is not only going based on your koyach, because after all, Rashi says it just goes on its own. Fire continues spreading on its own. As long as there's flammable material available.
You can say if the wind, an opposite wind comes, just puts the arrow down, it's a bit like the fire.
Okay, again, you could have a ruach shein and mitzuyah, but ordinarily, basically, as far as the arrow goes, yeah, it's based on your koyach. Rav Yechanan, my time alone with Rish Lakish. On the other hand, then, why does Rav Yechanan say like Rish Lakish? Why doesn't he, for example, he could have used that, the pasuk, I think Mo is going to quote later, for some other drasha. And after all, Rish Lakish does have a valid svara, that a chet is considerably different than Eish. That's what Tosfos says. The answer is, Amalak, Rav Yechanan can answer you, Mamoina ispe mamasha, hol ispe mamasha. The difference is, when you say it's something of Mamoina, like a shur, a bur, or whatever, it has mamasha. It has, there's an actual tangible shur over there that you have to watch. And similarly with the other nizakim. Fire is not something tangible. It's nothing that has any mamashas. Therefore, you could argue there's a difference.
What do you say? That's real mamashas.
It's not something that, I mean, it's obviously it's something that has power, but it's not something that, what is a fire after all? Heated air. Air has no mamashas. Yeah, but it's not something that you can handle. It's not something that you can handle.
Yeah,
you can hold a coal, you can hold a burning coal. It has no mamashas in the sense that it's an ethereal thing. It causes tremendous damage. So lots of it, but it's not something. It's air, basically. It's air. Now, Tosfos points out, so then why is Rabbi Yechanan comparing it to an arrow, which does have mamashas? The answer is because you could still have. We had cases before, for example, where somebody causes damage, let's say, with wind. We had a case the other day, where a chicken flaps its wing and causes damage with the wind from the air. You can have a case a person blows at something and makes it fall over and break, which would also be, he'd also be chayav for that. So we see that even chitzav in and of itself doesn't have to be something tangible either. Again, his breath is not something tangible, but yet it can cause damage and he'd be chayav for it. Tosfos also points out, I mean, a bo doesn't really have my moshus either. A bo is the absence of something. But okay, you have character that was dug out over there. The character has my moshus. And also Tosfos says that after all, at least, maybe bo is an exception, but the other kinds of mamon, the other kinds of nezakim, which are all doubted leila chalhazik, they're all things that normally travel on their own and cause damage, like shur and all the various types of shur and whatever, those all have mamashas, as opposed to fire. Before we go further in the Gemara, by the way, there is a really interesting thing. Now, the halacha ends up being like Rabbi Yechon, by the way. The halacha usually is like Rabbi Yechon against Rish Lakish. There's a major discussion that everybody brings, that the Nemuka Yosef asks on it. If we say, in the end, that the halacha is Ishi Mishum Chita, what Rabbi Yechon is saying, that when you light a fire, whatever continues happening with that fire is as if you're doing it the whole time. As if, you know, the arrow is still moving based on your power. Based on that, the Nemuka Yosef asks a famous question: how are you allowed to light Shabbos candles or to do any malacha where you start on Erev Shabbos and it continues on Shabbos? If you say Ishim Mishum Chita, doesn't it amount to then that you're causing the burning to happen on Shabbos? Yeah, you know, but what? Why not? The Shammai Taka holds. There's not in the halacha like a tilul. Even if Shammai agrees, you're allowed to light candles on Erev Shabbos as a kind of chachamim. But why? If Ishim Mishum Chita. So the Mukhe Yosef himself answers that the difference is basically when we say Ishim Mishum Chita, we don't mean that it's considered the whole time the fire is burning as if you're actually doing something at the moment. You started a process, which now, therefore, all of the inevitable results of it are considered that you did them right there at the beginning, when you shot that arrow, or when you lit that fire. Therefore, fine, when you light Shabbos candles, fine. They end up burning on Shabbos. But it's all based on a process that you started before Shabbos. You're not doing anything with it then. It's all a continuation of something that you started on Erev Shabbos. Well, it's not so obvious, since he had to ask the question, because actually there ends up being quite a lot of wonders in that. Among other things, there's a lot of interesting things in this, there's a lot that we can talk about. One interesting thing, there is a famous question asked about Rabbi Yochanan himself, saying Ishim Mishum Chitav, he himself also says, as far as Tisha B'Av, that if he had been in the generation when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, he would have said fast should be on the 10th of Av instead of the 9th. Because the Beis Mikdash, we know, was set on fire the afternoon of Tisha B'Av. It burnt throughout, most of it was burnt on Asar B'Av. Therefore, by rights, the fast should be on Asar B'Av, because that's when most of the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. So they asked the famous question, based on this thing from the Nemuka Yosef, so why is he saying he would have had it on the 10th? Shouldn't it be the same thing again as lighting Shabbos candles, where it began on the 9th? The trigger took place on the 9th, and that should be considered the important thing according to him. So they give a few different theories. Yeah, it seems as a theory in what Rabbi Yochanan said. So among the they have many answers that they give. Two of the answers they give are one that Rabbi Yochanan might distinguish between what we call in Lomdish terms the gavra and the chefta. There's the person and then there's the action. The person himself lit Shabbos candles before Shabbos, or in this case lit a fire which spread, and therefore it's considered he did the action at that time. The chefta though actually happens on Shabbos or afterwards when the fire burns. Similarly, here, the chesed of the Beis Hamikdash was mostly destroyed on the 10th, even though the Gabra lit it on the 9th. Therefore, that's what he makes that distinction. And then there's another interesting answer that ever brings it to someplace in a Sikha. It's brought from various other people as well. That the difference is, Ishim Mishum Chita, the logic is, once a person shoots an arrow, they can't get it back. The Eivishter is not like that. The Seichiz B'Mishpat Yadi actually brings on a Pasuk in Hazinu that even after the Eivishter shoots the arrow, it's always under his control. He can call it back anytime he wants. Therefore, even if the Beis Mikdash was set on fire on Tisha B'Av, the Eivishter could have stopped it at any point. And he didn't, and it ended up burning throughout Yud. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan himself argues the fact could have been on Yud.
Not that, but
the
stones weren't on fire,
Well, no, I mean, there was enough wood there, first of all, but second of all, the stones were limestone also.
Yeah. The arrow shot when it came back.
That's the difference, that was before, though, that was when it was shooting arrows to see which, yeah, okay. Yeah, right, okay. Hashem, I mean, the Goyim were his shulchan to do it, but the fire was actually started by the Eivishter, yeah.
No, the fire was not started by the Eivishter.
It was started under the Eivishter's control.
The fire
the citrus and company are still blamed for doing it because they had the chira to not be the keli, but of course they were keli for the Ebershter.
The second mitzvah of course that they didn't want to burn it.
Josephus said that. That's because he wanted to curry favor with the world.
He
just wanted to suck up to them. Okay, anyway, whatever. We could talk about this a while, but we need to get going. Besides all that, there are a number of Mephoshim also who say that there might be a distinction. This whole concept of Isha Mishum Chitzav might only apply to Nezakin. It might not apply to Shabbos. The Ran, for example, says that it doesn't apply to cases of murder, which is the Gemara talks about in Sanhedrin, and actually we're going to talk about it a little bit on Amud Beis over here. So therefore, there may be that distinction as well. You could say Isha Mishum Chitzav when it comes to Nezakin and not hold of that distinction and not hold of that when it comes to Shabbos. Getting back to our Gemara now. Let's see if we can prove one of these opinions, Rav Yochanan or Rish Lakish, based on our Mishnah. A kelev shenata harara, the case of our Mishnah, where a dog took a harara and ended up burning down a gabbish. So bishlam l'madama ishim ishim chitzav. So according to Rav Yochanan, that ishim ishim chitzav, it works out very well. Chitzav the kelev. That's why you chayev chati nezek for the gabbish. So, because it's considered, it's the equivalent of the when the dog puts the harara over there and burns the goddish, it's considered the equivalent of chitzav, it's the equivalent of a dog shooting an arrow, which would be tzurus. Tzurus is chati nezek. But if you say that the isha mishum mamonei, hai eish lav mamonei debar kelavu. This fire is not the mamon of the owner of the kelav. According to Rashi, literally it's not, because the harara belongs to somebody else. So the gachelas, the coal is not his to begin with. According to Tosfos, it's not his responsibility to guard it because it wasn't his harara in the first place. And actually, not so much that, but actually Tosfos points out the vort is that the Torah is mechayev you for a fire that you set, not for a fire that your dog set. So according to Rosh Lakish, why would he be mechayev?
Maybe he didn't protect the fire properly, so the dog could come and take the harara.
But the harara belongs to somebody else. So he wasn't protecting it to begin with. If anything, the owner of the harara should be the one who's responsible for not watching the harara. Okay. The answer is, yes, but what we could be talking about over here is that the dog threw the gachel, threw the coal onto the gavish.
In other words, he
threw it as opposed to placing it there. What's the difference? Therefore, da charora mishalom nezek shalom. So he pays for the charora for eating it. He pays nezek shalom. That's obvious because it's shame because the nezek of shame. Shame that the animal ate the charora, which is a normal thing for it to do. For the place where the gachelas landed on the pile of grain, you pay chati nezek because that's tzuris. Or Rashi says another possibility, because Mishuna, it's unusual for a dog to throw the gachelas. Val Godish Kula Potter. As a matter of fact, yes, Rish Lakish might argue, for the rest of the Godish, you actually are Potter.
Because the Godish
is, again, it's not Mamayna. Either the gachelas is not, either the coal is not your Mamayna because it came from somebody else, or according to Tosfos, your dog is the one who set the fire. So fine, throwing the coal there and causing a localized fire over there in that part of the Godish, fine, it's service. But everything else, according to Rish Lakish, should be Potter. Rabbi Nachmanel has a different explanation. He doesn't say the adye adruye. His girsa apparently is the dadye dadruye, and he says it means instead of the dog picking up the harara, where arguably then you as the owner of the dog made a kinyan on this harara, the case is rather where the dog sort of dragged it along or moved it along on the ground, and therefore no kinyan was ever made.
When he moves and drags. When he moves
it, then no kinyan. There was never any hagbah. So there, yeah, there's never. So therefore, it never left the chazaka of its own. But that's the point. According to Rabbi Hananel, but not. He didn't pick it up off the ground.
If he did, then according
to Rabbi Hananel's understanding would be different. Okay. So you can't prove from our Mishnah one way or the other. Tashma, come, let's try to prove from another Mishnah, again in the sixth Perek, which is the main place that we're in our Masechta, where we're going to be talking about the concept of Eish and the details of it. A gomel ton pishdon. If you have a camel, your famous example, a camel carrying a load of flax, it's walking in rishos rabim. Nichnas a pishdon elosecha chanus. Some of the flax sticks into a storefront, so it's a huge load. So some of it gets inside the doorway. and it catches on fire with from the storekeeper's lamp. The hidlakas abira, and it set the whole building on fire. Then the owner of the camel is chayev because he shouldn't have overloaded his camel. It's not so unusual. Wait, we're going to talk about it. It's not so unusual, though. The fact that he overloaded it so much that it could go and then stick into the store, yeah. You're mentioning it's a famous example. Yeah, there's Rashi at the beginning of Vayeshev that compares, like, Yaakov is all nervous about Esav and all of the Lufim. Maybe she says, yeah, one spark from your candle. Well, yeah. On the other hand, if the storekeeper leaves his candle outside, then the storekeeper is chayev because he shouldn't have put it outside. Rabbi Yehuda says, on the other hand, if it was a Chanukah menorah, then he'd be potter because he's supposed to put it outside for some minisa. The Chachamim over there argue you could have put it higher up. Anyway, the point is that the
candle would be tall. Then he would have failed somebody to do
it. Yeah, put it high up carefully, you know. Okay, so thus far the Mishnah. Now let's analyze it. Bishleim l'mandam ishe mishum chitzav. So again, according to Rabbi Yechanan, that ish is a matter of chitzav. It's like shooting arrows. The reason why Yechayev chitzav the gomel, who, again, because it's the equivalent of the camel shooting arrows. Therefore, we understand why the owner of the gomel is chayev. But again, according to Rish Lakish, that's a matter of mamonai. Hai ish la mamonai de baal gomel. It's not his mamon. It's the Chenveni's lamp. Okay, so it was inside. The Chenveni put it where it was supposed to be. Fine. Still, ultimately, his candle that sparked the fire that burnt down the whole building. So why is the Baal Gomel why is the Baal Gomel higher?
What are you saying that the ish belongs to the
Chenveni. So according to Rashi. Fine, that's not the point. So anytime when you light a fire in your cluster and it burns somebody else's property, it's also against your will. You didn't deliberately, you're not an arsonist, you didn't deliberately set the fire.
But it was there?
It was there, yeah. The answer is, Amalach v'shlokesh, hachav mayaskin v'misachseches kol abira kula. So v'shlokesh can answer, you're not talking about that the gummel just passed by momentarily and like one little bit of the flax caught on fire and then everything developed from there. You're actually talking about that the camel was passing by in front of the entire building and the flax, meanwhile, was smoldering. Misachseches literally means like it's singeing. It's singeing the whole building. In the singeing, like setting it partially on fire, in the sense that, in other words, the animal is walking by along the entire storefront, and as it's walking along, the burning flax keeps on touching. It touches one part, another part, another part, and as it's going along, it's setting everything on fire. That's where Shlokish can argue that that's what you're talking about. Then that's different. Then you have one part set on fire, and the rest of it went on its own. Here you're talking about the camel itself actually set this part and this part and this part, et cetera, on fire. Okay, then the question is, Yochi Ema Seifa, fine, you're going to say that way, look at the next part of the Mishnah. If you're saying if the storekeeper left his candle outside, then he's the one going to be chayev. If the camel is literally setting the whole building on fire piece by piece, why should the chenveni be chayev even in that case? The answer is, v'sha'omda. You're talking about the camel stood in one place. Meaning, in other words, now, this is not the whole answer. The Gemara is actually going to continue the answer, but before it even has a chance to finish the answer, the Gemara is interjecting with a question. But wait, the point is that before we were assuming it's moving along. Now we're saying that camel's load is so large, it fills up the entire space in front of the storefront. So as it's standing there, one part of it burnt, the fire is spreading very quickly through the flax, very flammable stuff, and therefore, as it's standing there, the whole storefront is getting lit on fire from this one big load of flax. Now, again, the Gemara hasn't even had a chance to finish its answer and interjects with a question. What do you mean? If the animal stops, how much more so the Baal Gomel should be chayev no matter what? What's he doing? How does this animal stand there? As soon as he notices his flax on fire, he should get the animal out of there. The answer is, and what we're actually talking about, you didn't let me finish. It's not just that stood there for no good reason. The case is that the animal stopped in order to urinate. And once it stops like that, you're not getting it to go after that. There's an onus, therefore. And then at that point, then you still have to use the sitter. Then you still have to use the answer that the load of flax is big enough to cover the whole storefront, and therefore when the load of flax gets lit on fire, then the whole place, the whole storefront is the makom gachelas. It's all where the coals, where the burning flax is. Therefore, you can't talk about ishoy or chesav or chesav. You can't talk about mamonoi or chesav. Of necessity, is it? No. Well, it's onus that the bala gomel in the case where the candle was outside. So the candle is outside. The chemini shouldn't have put it there. Therefore, at that particular moment, worst timing, the gomel stops over there to pee. Meanwhile, the flax is burning and setting the whole store on fire. The bala gomel is possible because it was an onus. The chemini is chayav for putting his candle outside. You can't talk about that. You can't talk about chisav or mamona, because in this case, it's not chisav or mamona. It's the actual fire is there in front of each part of the store. It's not you lit a fire in one place and it's spreading on its own to other parts of the store where you could deal with whether it's chisav or mamona. So therefore, Reisha Bal Gomel Chayev. So therefore, in the first case of the Mishnah, the owner of the Gomel was still Chayev, even though in the end, the fact of the matter is, he couldn't prevent the animal from stopping. Nevertheless, he's careless in the first place, Deloy Baila, La Pusha Bettina, because he shouldn't have overloaded it so much that the Pishon is going to go into the store. On the other hand, in the Sefer, the store owner is Chayev, because he shouldn't have put his candle outside. But again, according to Rish Lakish, you could say it's not really a question of this whole machlokas that I'm having with Rabbi Yochanan would be, again, I lit a fire in one place, it spread to a different place. What happened? In this case, where the fire was lit on the flax is where the fire took place that burnt down the store. The flax didn't ignite one part of the store, and then it spreads on its own to the rest of the building. It's igniting the whole building at one time.
So the first case,
since the candle was inside and the bottle of gomel is chayev because he overloaded the animal and therefore created the fire hazard. In the second case, the chemini is chayev because the candle was outside. Yeah. Tashma, come, let's try to prove again.
The candle was not outside the store, but still in Roshus and Penman.
Doesn't matter, it's still Ramashus, it's still outside the store.
Why did he have to do anything with Roshus and Penman?
With fire, it doesn't matter, Roshus and Penman, or what? Fire is high of anyway. Because the Pasuk doesn't make a distinction. The Pasuk makes a distinction by Shane and Rangel.
No, Roshus and Penman, that's the fire.
What does the pasuk say? If fire goes out, a mota coats him, and it finds thorns, and a goddish, and a pile of grain gets burnt, oyakoma, or standing grain, oyasaber, or the field itself, shalom shalom, a maver as a beira, the one who lit the fire shall pay. Doesn't say you're just an Adam or just a Nizik or what. You're just a Mazik. Fine, it's different. I have the right to light fires in my resource. And what are you doing bringing your stuff into my resource? But here it's just a Nizik. Here it's either just an Adam or just a Nizik. Yeah, you're Chayev either way. But again, if the candle was inside, you, the Bala Gomel, are going to be Chayev because you. If the candle, right, well. Right, because you know, the point is not
outside the store, but inside the chenvani bushu.
Doesn't matter. If it's outside the store, l'chora, then it can still be chayev no matter what, because the animal can still pass by, and yet. Tashma, come, let's try to prove
one of the distinctions, which is exactly when it goes. But other things than fire we don't make.
Because that's how the Pasuk says it. The Pasuk only makes that distinction by Shane and Regal, not by Karen. Well, we're going to have later on. We have machlokes before the Tarkan and the Rabbanim. We're going to have the details about it in a couple of days about whether there's a difference with Keren, Chatzi Nezek, or Nezek Shalom. But everybody agrees that Keren applies in any place, and Eish also applies any place. It's only Shane Bedegel the Torah makes the exception this day after. Yeah, Tashma, come, let's prove from another case. Hamadlik is a goddish. The Mishnah says over there that if a person lights a pile of grain on fire, somebody else's pile of grain, there was a goat tied to the goddish, which got burnt along with it, or there was an eved knani, that is, standing next to the pile, the goddish, the nisrafi, my name is burnt together with it, chayev. The person who lit the fire is chayev to pay for the goat or for the eved. The eved should have run away. Yeah. The goat, the goat was tied up. It couldn't run away. But you're not hired for killing the goat. Therefore, so you're hired for the goddess and you're hired for the goat. In the case of the Eved, we don't say you hired Mister for killing the Eved because the Eved should have been able to run away. On the other hand, Eved kofu slovig di samachloi. What if the other way around? What if there was an Eved tied to the goddess? And there was a goat standing next to the goddess, Benistrafimai, and they were brought together with it. Potter. Then you potter. Name why you potter? Because you're going to be chayiv misa. Therefore, come live with the Davin, as we learned a lot about in Subs. Namely, in other words, the person in this case is going to be chayiv misa for killing the Eved. The person is chayiv misa for killing an Eved just as much as for killing a regular Ben Yisrael. The one who lit the fire. The one who lit the fire. Since the Eved is tied up, he can't run away. When you lit the fire, it's going to go and burn that Eved. Therefore, you are chayev for killing that Eved. Once you're chayev for killing the Eved, you're potter for having your potter from Nezek for the Gadish or for the Gdi. So we learned in Ksubas, actually, that even we learned in Ksubas, and Gemara mainly discusses in Sanhedrin, that even if there wasn't Hasra per se, the very fact that there is a Chiyuv Misa over here means that the person is still going to be Potter from the Nezikin. Once you have it's a case where there is a Chiyuv Misa involved, then it doesn't matter whether the Misa actually takes place or not. If I remember correctly, that's what it is.
It's called some term.
It's called Kom Leib Adab. I mean, it's
called.
Yeah. Right. There is an interesting point that the Rashba brings up, which is that like this, what happened? I mean the Eved didn't get burnt at the same moment as the Goddess, either it got burnt before or after it. Why should he be saved? Because you're chayev mitzvah for the Eved, therefore you're potter from paying for the Goddess. You know, we learned for example in Ksuvus, we had a case over there of somebody who was over who ganved something, and afterwards he becomes chayev in Isra of Shabbos. We say he's still chayev for the Gneva, because he's chayev in the Gneva before he ever did the Isra of Shabbos. Why don't we say a similar thing over here? Yeah, come over down. Yeah, we only say come over down when it comes at the same time, right? So why over here would it be different? There's a couple of answers, but one interesting, not necessarily though, one interesting answer that the Rashba gives, I think it's the Rashba that gives it anyway, is as soon as this person lights the fire, because the Eved is tied up over there, this person is now considered a Roidish. He's an assailant. He's trying to kill somebody. And the din is a Roidish is Mishayif and Apshat. Never mind, before you ever killed a person, as soon as you see somebody roidif achas ver lahargoy, it's a mitzvah too. If you can prevent him by disabling him, then you do that. And if not, then it's a rasmi lemitzvah. The very fact that he is a roidif, he doesn't even need hatsura, he doesn't need nothing. If you can't prevent him by disabling him, he's being roidif the Eved, because he's setting a fire, which is going to end up killing this Eved. Therefore, you, the bystander, have the din is you are obligated to try and prevent him somehow. If you're able to prevent him, there's a couple of possibilities. If you can prevent him by disabling him, if you can prevent him, let's say, by cutting off his arm or his leg or something, the roidif that is, and that'll be enough to stop him, then you do that. If not, if the only way to stop him is by killing him, then you do that. Therefore, he's hit to Achmi Lemitza. It's considered. He made himself available to be killed. Immediately, he became a roidif. So even before the Eved was ever killed, the moment he set that fire, which inevitably is going to burn the Eved, if somebody doesn't come and put it out first, he's a roidif at that point. Therefore, you still say, come live it out of him, regardless of what order things got burnt in.
But destroying his leg or his arm was enough to prevent him.
If you could do that.
If you killed him then.
Then you'd attack the high mitzvah. Yeah. We'll learn about it in Sanhedrin in a year and a half or so. But you're saving him from doing the Avera, yeah. It's called Maskula, yeah. Nitin Maskula Benapsha, yeah. You're saving that Roidif from doing this Avera, yeah. Anyway, getting back to our Gemara over here, therefore. So again, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we can understand it very well. If Isha is considered chitzav, it's considered like an arrow, mishum hachi potter, then that is why as soon as you lit that fire, it's the equivalent again of shooting an arrow, which is you can't bring it back. That fire is inevitably going to burn this Eved. Therefore, come live with the Rabbi Menei's wife. Elam Adama Isha Mishra Mamone, but if you say it's Mishra Mamone, am I potter? Why should he be potter for paying for the Goddish or the Gdi? Ilu Kota Tore Abda, after all, if you're sure were to kill an Eben, Hokinami Dilemma Chayev, wouldn't you be Chayev? You are in fact Chayev. You have to pay the owner Shloshim Shkolim, as the Pasuk says. So we see, when your Mamon kills an Eben, you're Chayev. If Isha is Chayev Mishra Mamone, why shouldn't you have to pay for it? Why shouldn't you have to pay? Okay, Tosfos says that.
So Rashi
says the vote is the same way as if you shur kills an eved, you have to pay shloshim shkolim. By the same logic, if you ash kills an eved, you should also have to pay shloshim shkolim. Tosfos says that's not what the Gemara means, because as a matter of fact, actually, we learned when we talked about in the first perek about the differences between the different avodas and zikin, we said there's a difference. Sure, you're chayav to pay the knas for an eved, ash you're not. So rather, Tosfos says what the Gemara means over here is that when it comes to something that your mamon does, there's no kum limit d'rabbanan. Kum limit d'rabbanan is when you yourself do something that results in somebody else's death. If according to Rish Lakish, Isha Mishum Mamono, you lit the fire, but the fact that it spreads is just a matter of Mamon rather than a direct consequence of what you did, then you're not Chayav Misa in the first place for the Abed. So why should you be Potter for the Goddish? Why should you be? Yeah. I'm a Lakish Mishum Lakish, so Rish Lakish can answer you. Hachav Mayaskin and Chehit the Gufishal Abed. Fine, but you could be talking about a case where he actually lit the fire on the Abed's body. You're assuming that he lit some other part of the Goddish and the fire traveled along the rope over there and whatever and reached the Eved. No, assuming that he actually took the fire and then set the Eved himself on fire. And then the Goddish...
He would not have been fired.
Again, according to Rashi, the question... No, according to Rashi, the point is that if you say Isha Mishum Mamona, he ought to be hired to pay the owner for the Eved, the same way as if you're sure. And according to Tosfos, the point is that you shouldn't be chayiv mitzvah because it would be considered your mamon. The ash would be your mamon, according to Rish Lakish, that killed the other. And this is, by the way, what I was mentioning on Amar Aleph, that the Ran, for example, and then some other Rishonim say that this whole distinction of isha mishum chitzav or whatever may not apply in matters of chayiv mitzvah and dinin afashos anyway. It may only apply to nizakim.
Very hard to say mamon.
What?
Yeah, there is.
No, but that's the thing. When we say over here, when Shehit is the Gufa Shel Eved, that answer might even be necessary according to Rabbi Yochanan, because otherwise there might not be a Chiyuv Misa, the other way around, actually. This that we're saying, Isha Mishum Chitzav, this that we're saying as direct or indirect or whatever, when it comes to Dinin of Foshas, the Gemara discusses in Sanhedrin, for example, that a person puts somebody else in a situation where the son is inevitably going to beat down on him and kill him, then he is Chiyuv Misa. You do talk about direct or indirect in other ways over there, but where it's an inevitable consequence, then yes. So the answer is, okay, so then to come live with the Dabbinay. Then obviously, if you lit the fire on the Evan's body, then come live with the Dabbinay. Question is, well, then what's the Chiddush? Obviously, then in that case, come live with the Dabbinay. The answer is, yes, but we still need to be told the case. What if the Gdi belongs to one person and the Eved belongs to another person? So what's the point? The Chiyuv Misa comes relative to one person, the owner of the Eved. The Chiyuv Tashlumin for the Gdi comes to somebody else. Nevertheless, we would still say that come live with the Namine, and therefore the guy who owns the Gdi ends up losing out, doesn't end up getting paid because you're Chiyuv Misa for having killed the Eved. Mamun lozeh and afarshus lozeh, it's called.
In other words, if the Eved was killed?
If the Eved was killed, then you're potter for any other nizakin that happened at the same time, even if those nizakin were actually to somebody else.
And we would have thought differently?
We would have thought differently, yes. And therefore we need to be told. Because we would have thought that, so you're chayiv mitzvah because of killing one person's Eved. You should still be chayiv tashlumin to the other guy. Tosfos actually discusses the details of it a little bit, but yeah.
So that's
the
other people?
Yes. Okay, Toshma, come, let's prove from another case. Hashaleach ha-saber b'yad to the cotton. If somebody sends a fire in the hands of a cheresh shoy to the cotton, potter medina, or b'chay b'dina shemayim. You say potter from anything that happens because of that fire, the one who sent the fire. Obviously, the cheresh shoy to the cotton themselves can't be responsible. the one who sent the fire with them is Potter Medina Adam, he's Potter from paying in Beis Din, V'chayev Medina Shemayim, but he's Chayev under the Eibishter's Din. Potter
for what?
Potter
in other
Medina Adam,
no,
but
because what?
Wait. That's what we have to figure out why. Wait. We have to figure out. Wait, we already had this discussion in the first paragraph. When we say Potter Medina Adam Chayev, what does it mean Chayev Medina Shemayim? Some Mephoshim say that it means Vidina Shemayim. It means that if he wants to be Yotze, if he wants to prevent himself from being punished by the Eivishter, he's going to have to pay the full amount of the damage. Others say maybe not necessarily the full amount, he's just going to have to do fire. He's going to have to give something to the other person to appease him, an appropriate amount that's necessary to appease him. It may not have to be the full amount. Because the Dina Shemayim is because you damage the other person's property. So if you appease him and get him and then get him to forgive you for a smaller amount, then fine. Anyway. So again, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Ishem Ishem Chitzav, we can understand it very easily, Chitzav the Cheresh, because in this case, it's the equivalent of the Cheresh shooting an arrow. You can't hold the Cheresh liable. You yourself who gave it to him, okay, but she has to give it to him, fine. But the fact of the matter is that the fact of the matter is he's the one who said it, not you.
He's a Cheresh.
Okay.
So it's you. Yeah. You said it. You gave him the chance to.
Okay, so Tosfos says because not korev levadai. The difference is when you set a fire with korev levadai, if there's a normal wind, korev means almost certain. And if there's a normal wind, it's going to spread. Here it's not necessarily korev levadai that he's going to do. Anyway, Eru lamando ama ishim ishim amoyne, but according to Rishlokish, ishim ishim amoyne, why should he be potter? Even masa shur is lecheres shayt of a cotton. If you were to give your shur to a cheres shayt of a cotton to watch, are you going to say you wouldn't be chayev? Obviously you are. So why should Eish be any different? The answer is ha'itmar Allah. Don't you know that there was actually said on it? We learned this in the first parak. Amir Shlokish Mishmei Dechizkiya Loi Shonu Elak Shemasal Gachelos V'Liba. That actually Rishlokish would say in the name of Chizkiya that this din about being potter is only if you gave the Cheresh Shoyt of a cotton a coal and he himself, which there was no actual fire yet. The coal was burning, but there was no flame, and he burnt on it. Not burnt. He blew on it, and therefore blew up the flame and then started a fire.
But
if you gave him something with an actual flame burning, something that's actually on fire, chayav. My time of bari hazekah, because then it's clear hezek. So yes, you could argue then that giving him a sure amounts to a clear hezek, as opposed to giving him a gachet. Rabbi Yechanan, now I feel a shalheves potter. Whereas Rabbi Yechanan would say, even if you gave him an open flame, you would be potter. Because he holds, it's the cheresh holding this fire. Sabsa means him holding on to, or Rashi actually mentions in the first paragraph, we have two explanations that Rashi gave. One is sabsa with a beis, which means holding on to it. The other is sabsa with two vavs, which means like his connection with it. Either way, the fact that the cheresh is involved is what caused the fire. Therefore, lemechayev ademosel gabza silt of a shraga. And therefore, Rabbi Yechanan would say, you're only chayev if you give him all of the ingredients that are necessary to start a fire. You give him gabza, meaning dry wood, the silta, and kindling, like wood shavings or newspaper or whatever that you need in order to get a fire started, visha ushraga, and a candle. You gave him all the materials necessary then to show that's a priya. But just giving him, just short of him, short of that. If one's Rabbi Yechanan, you would say it's mishum chitav and a cheresh. A cheresh, actually, as we're going to learn later on, the eighth parak, as Mar is going to point out, that in general, when a cheresh causes a hezek, it's called p'giyasan ra. You're in a bad situation if you get damaged by a cheresh. If you damage him, you're going to be chayev just as much as if he was a regular person. But if he damages you, he's potter because he's a cheresh.
Well, you also have to create conditions of certainty
that things are going to happen.
What's the word of Mar is a candle?
Shraga means a candle, yeah.
Short of that,
then yeah, whereas according to Rish Lakish, just giving him an open flame is already enough. Okay. But nevertheless, the din is like a din. Okay. To be continued tomorrow, that's the chance.
Unless you can rule out that I'm going to talk about a specific case, or the means that I know it's talking about a specific case, but I'm limited.
We could, usually Hakam Ma'askin and the Gemara means we could say, because based on the question that you just asked, we could say that the Mishnah or the Braise or whatever is limiting itself to this one case.
Unless you can disprove that,
yeah.